All right, are you ready?
I am ready.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
This is the Fueling Creativity Podcast.
On this show, we'll be talking about creativity topics and how they apply to the field of education.
We'll be speaking with scholars, educators, and resident experts about their work, challenges they face, and digging deeper into new and varying perspectives of creativity.
All with the goal to help fuel a more rich and informed discussion that provides teachers and parents with knowledge they can use at home or in the classroom.
So let's begin.
Hello, and welcome to our last official episode of season one of the Fueling Creativity Podcast. Now, during the season, we've received some suggestions that Cindy and myself offer a debrief after some of our interviews. So we figured we'll end season one with a bonus debrief episode in an effort to try and summarize all our thoughts of everything that we've covered this season. And Cindy, I don't know about you, but I feel we've covered a lot. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I have learned so much from all of our interviews this season, and I can't wait to debrief this with you.
Here's the parameters. We should tell everyone what we've agreed with the parameters of our debrief. So first of all, at the end of each episode of the Fueling Creativity Podcast, we always ask our guests to provide three takeaways for our listeners related to the topic we're talking about. So in this debrief, we've challenged ourselves to come up with kind of three takeaways that we've had from the entire season of the Fueling Creativity Podcast, our first season. But we've also not shared our three takeaways with each other. So this is the first time I'm hearing Cindy's three takeaways, and this is the first time she's hearing my three takeaways. So we're a little bit excited to hear what each of us have got. We also was wondering whether we've got the same three takeaways. And without further ado, Cindy, why don't you provide us with your takeaways for season one of the Fueling Creativity Podcast?
Sure. So I think there have been so many interesting conversations that have spanned the field of creativity. And the first thing that really struck me that I hadn't thought about before was our conversation with Casey Lathrop around teachers as designers. And I think it's such an interesting way to think about being a teacher, as being a designer of what happens in the classroom. How do you construct a good learning experience? So her bringing up the parallels between being a designer and being a teacher and being a designer as a teacher, because one of the things about design is it might work in a certain situation, but when you take it out of that situation, it might work differently. Also, design changes over time. So it's based on what the needs are of the students at that time. So wouldn't it be great, Matt, if we could get teachers to think of themselves as designers? So as you approach your school year this year, how might you look at yourself as a designer of these learning episodes or learning experiences?
I'm really glad you brought that one up. It's not one of my three, but the title of my dissertation was The Teacher Designer. And I actually completely agree with this concept. And what I would say is that teachers have always been designers. And if we just kind of break down the concept of design, the idea of design is a deliberate attempt to design a solution to a problem. And if you think about how many problems teachers interact with in normal times in the classroom, and then you, of course, think about all of the challenges and problems that they've had to address during COVID, they have been acting as designers almost every single day of their practice. And so the teaching profession is very much a design profession. And so if we can begin to unpick what that word means a little bit more, we start to realize that teachers do need to think creatively, and they need to think divergently, and they need to go and gather information and data to then converge on ideas and draw conclusions, prototype. All of these things that are common in the design world are things that teachers probably do regularly during their practice. We just need to make more of it.
So Matt, given that you did your dissertation around this, can you tell our teachers out there listening, what are three things they can do to have a mindset for design?
Okay, number one, going back to that idea of kind of like a deliberate attempt to solve a problem, I would ask questions of your environment. So you had mentioned kind of that the context. I'll ask questions about your environment. What challenges exist in that environment? where are the opportunities to go and produce something new, you know, a new solution? And so once you've identified a thing, I would say that that's a thing that you're going to work on designing that solution. And then when you feel you've produced that solution, the second thing I would ask is for you to think about, well, how do you know you've solved that problem? What is the impact that solution is actually having in that environment? Has it completely resolved the challenge? And the third thing that I would think about is to remember, from a design perspective, one of the kind of real big buzzwords at the moment is empathy, human-centered design. And so it's a recognition that our end users, right? So students, I think actually Casey referenced that in her episode. When you think about students, maybe fellow colleagues are kind of end users of the solution that we've created for our learning environment, it's remembering that not all end users are the same. And so, you know, I don't know how many subgroups you might kind of split students into, but if you've got a class of 30, it might be that you've created three or four subgroups of students. And so you're thinking about how that solution is interacting with each of those subgroups. So you never, ever feel that one solution fits all. And so as a designer, I think you've always got to take that mentality. So they're the three things that I would suggest a teacher thinks about if they want to assume a design mindset.
All right, my second one, context, context, context. So I wasn't very familiar with Vlad Glavino's work on sociocultural theory of creativity. And, you know, we did the interview with him and immediately followed, and it was really interesting. And I liked it and I appreciated it and I understood it, but it was really brought home to me when immediately after that, so we went right into a conversation with Mohammed from Palestine about creativity in Palestine. And all of a sudden, I felt through that interview, Vlad's work was brought to life. So how do we bring creativity into a context where there is severe trauma? How do we bring it in into environments and cultures that are not like our own? And how important it is to actually work with people in that culture and area in order to be successful and work together. Because as Mohammed said, you know, we had done some work with them, but us coming in and doing what works here in the United States is not going to necessarily translate. There might be pieces that translate, but we need help in developing it to make it relevant and effective in different contexts. And I think that was like such an epiphany after we had that conversation with Mohammed. So it was interesting to hear the theory from Vlad, but listening to Mohammed, and he had gunshots in the background that I know gave us both chills when it was all happening, and thinking about what it's like to bring creativity into a context when there's gunshots in the background is much different than what it's like to bring it into a context that I'm currently living in. So that was unquestionably my biggest insight of our whole season, was around this, the importance of working with people in the culture to help them develop things that are effective for them.
And as a reminder that you know, Vlad's social cultural theory for creativity reminds us that, you know, we've got all of these different elements. And so, you know, there's the individual creator. And when we're talking about the individual creator, we might be talking about, you know, their ability to produce and consider lots of different alternatives and, you know, think outside the box and all of it, tolerate ambiguity, all these different things. But then there's the actual thing that's created and the process to creating it. Of course, that takes place in the environment. And there's different audience members. And I want to go back to the design piece, end users. And so I completely agree with you. That was one of my pieces, context, context, context. And so for the teachers listening out there, what my takeaway was, every time you go to a professional learning experience, a professional development session on a new technology, a new kind of like approach to feedback or learning or assessment, you have to realize that this is kind of like a kind of general summary of what this thing is, what it's about, what it's looked like in other contexts. But it's up to you as the teacher to take it and make it work inside your context. And so that, you know, is obviously also relevant for creativity. When you're listening to episodes in this podcast, you've got to think about, right, what does this mean for me in my professional context as a teacher in this particular school district with these students, with these resources available to me?
And I think to build on that, Matt, I often have educators who say to me, can you give me a script so I can go into my classroom and do this with a script? And while I'm going to be sharing something later on with you about my upcoming book, which is around lessons and providing lessons to educators, you really have to take it and turn it into your own, because that's the only way that you're going to provide the kind of meaning and effectiveness that you're looking for. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that context, 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 and really taking what works for you and running with it and keeping open to things that you think, oh, I'm not sure if this is going to work, but giving that moment of pause to say, is there anything that I can take from this that will be useful or that I could try out, even if it's not successful immediately?
All right. So your third and final takeaway, Cindy.
So my third and final takeaway comes from our conversation with Brian Alexander around artificial intelligence. And what I found really interesting was in my prepping for his talk and trying out different artificial intelligence programs and applications and finding that things are developing rapidly in order to help us create, and that our children, Matt, you and I, we have, you know, I have tweens and you have younger children, but that our children are going to be working with artificial intelligence. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be, I mean, they already in some ways are. I mean, if you look at something like Minecraft, they're already creating with artificial intelligence and computers and technology. But I think that as we move forward, it's going to be even higher. And one of the things that I found when we posted that was that some people are afraid of that and some people don't want that. And I can understand it's scary. It's a little unnerving. I have a Tesla car. So, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, I would never drive a Tesla. I would be too afraid to let it drive for me. And I felt the same way when I got my Tesla. I was worried about driving it because, you know, I'm used to being in control. But when you say I can actually use this to help me create faster, more effectively, I can create more. So it's sort of like the abundance. I can create more. I can create better. Some of the programs that I was trying, I would take a sentence that I didn't like and it would change it into different ways to say it. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. If you get stuck, it's like having your own little personal, you know, coach next to you saying, how about you say this? And then you keep moving on. So the blocks and barriers to write, even writing, have changed for me since I've started sort of playing with these different applications. So what I found really sort of mind-blowing about that conversation and in the practice of that is how that's going to change the way our kids work and create as they get older. Because I think it's coming quickly. And I think for people who are afraid of it, it's actually going to hurt them because it's not about taking over. It's not about artificial intelligence taking over all of our jobs. It's about how to work effectively with artificial intelligence.
Well, you know what? You're right. Because when we was chatting just before this debrief, you said, I bet you will have two of the same out of the three. And you're right, because the episode with Brian Alexander was the second of my three takeaways as well. And I completely agree. And I think there was a moment in the show where I suddenly heard Brian talking and I said, oh my God, this is the way he's talking about us working with artificial intelligence and machine learning, which is part of artificial intelligence, is very similar to how we speak about creativity working in groups. Because if you look at the education system in this idea that the education system is very much about individuals, it's about the individual acquiring knowledge, it's about assessing what the individual can do. And of course, in the real world, that's not really how things work, right? We're interacting with systems, we're working in teams, and it's really about, you know, whatever we do, it's typically about what we do together. And I'm laying the context, because what I suddenly realized was we now have to think about working collaboratively with machines, as you've said. So when we're thinking about our creative production and the outcomes that we produce in the future, and cultivating students to engage in this process successfully, we are having to think about how they're going to be interacting with artificial intelligence. And what's interesting about that, I don't know if we have the answer, but like, you know, it's that chicken and the egg. Is the machines going to kind of like provide us with the problem through data? You know, are we going to kind of like have these, hey, we've just identified this real significant problem that we've gathered from this huge live data set that we're monitoring, right? Now let's work together, human, to design a solution. And then the human kicks in and starts working with the machine to design a solution. Or is it a case that we as humans are identifying problems and then going in and soliciting the support and help of artificial intelligence to help us better our design process as we engage in working toward that solution? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's so fascinating. I feel like it's an open question, and the only thing we know is we will be working with machines at some level. The extent of what level that is and how quickly it's going to come is really the thing that we have to sit and see.
I think the other piece is how I like your chicken and egg question. And I also wonder about how it will help us solve problems. So if we have data to support certain things, will that help us solve the world problems? Some of the world problems, any of the world problems, so that it can be more effective and move more quickly than it has been working, say, in the last 10 years, or, you know, even if we went back 20 years. So will this help propel us in creating solutions more quickly because we have access to so much more? Matt, you said you had two out of the three that I had. So what is your third?
Okay, so my third point is probably something most of us already know, and that's the role of questioning. So this topic came up a few times. I remember it in our discussion with Ron Baghetto, but it was the discussion with Natalie Nixon that really got me thinking. And I think it was something that she said in regard to these kind of like open questions, particularly the what and why questions. So I went away and I was thinking about this from a parent perspective. And I was starting to think about my young ones and all those big why questions they have. I'm going to give an example that's an aware question, but where does the sun go at nighttime? You shared stories about like questions about the digestive system. We get questions about volcanoes and earthquakes. And so I'm thinking about how can we or how do we influence the questions our children generate and young people generate, both in at home and also in the classroom environment. And I think that the classroom environment, for the most part, the curriculum is probably initiating those questions that might come home. But as parents, we've kind of got a big opportunity to kind of expose them to different things that they might not get in the curriculum. And I'm a big fan of nature walks, taking the little ones on a nature walk, uncovering a stone and just kind of like discovering, you know, things that exist in nature. I'm a big fan of going to cultural institutions, museums. But then there's another thing that I think it's actually come from discussions you and I have had is about the stories that you expose them to, the stories that you tell, stories that you tell about your family. I tell a lot of stories about their grandparents, my parents, but then we're also sharing all these different picture books. And so I think I haven't quite answered this. I feel like I'm going to kind of probably do a blog post on dadsforcreativity.com to try and articulate my thoughts around this a little bit more. But, you know, if we think about questioning as being the beginning of a creative journey, and it's like they're going to generate questions within their environment, their home environment. So what are we doing? What experiences are we offering that can lead to more rich, original questions? That is my third takeaway.
I love it. And I think bringing in that diversity and finding ways in which we can expose them to unusual texts. And I think, you know, one of the things that I used to do when my kids, especially when they were little, we would go to the library and I would say, pick a book that you would normally not pick. And let's read that book and see if the cover justifies what's in the text. So, you know, looking at diverse things, things that we might not necessarily be interested in. My family is not very interested in sports, but it's still fun to pick up a sports book and page through it and learn some of the terminology and apply it to the things that we are interested in, because you never know when you're going to spark curiosity in children. What one thing might make them say, oh, that's so interesting.
And I think also, because we don't know what might spark that curiosity and wonder about their world, when there is the spark, we've got to run with it. I think that's the other piece, is that, you know, I remember my first child, my first boy and my third boy, they were the ones that started to ask questions about insects. My middle guy never asked questions about insects, so he never went on a nature walk. But I took my first and third child on their nature walks as soon as they started asking questions about bugs and insects. And so I think as parents, you know, but also as educators, we've got to run with those questions. As soon as we see that spark, that's our cue not to answer it, but to kind of continue to provide them with new information, new experiences that can expand that curiosity and wonder.
I also would build on that, Matt, by saying, you know, when we are in those situations and kids ask questions, that it's absolutely acceptable to say, I don't know the answer to that, but where might we find the answer? So could we find the answer on Google? Or, you know, if you have a question about, you know, what, how fast does your hair grow? Then you find a hairdresser to go ask that question to, or where might be all the ways you might find, how might you find those solutions or answers to the questions that you have? So I really like modeling that for both my students and my children to say, I have no idea, but we better go find out. And that leads to their curiosity and finding that solution.
And I feel bad because now I want to kind of like build on that even more. And I'm really worried about time. But I think this, I do want to touch on technology, right? And so we have these devices. And sometimes when I'm interacting with parents and parent workshops, sometimes you can see that I'm not an advocate for technology, but I do see these tools. And you referenced Google, and to a certain extent, YouTube. We have to make sure that we're guiding them on how to act responsible and keep themselves safe online. But you have access to a mammoth amount of information and knowledge. And so if we can get them to see these devices as tools that can assist them on their wonder and curiosity journey built around questions, then they can use these tools to aid in their search. Okay, so Cindy, before we go, we need to kind of ask one more question. That's a question about you and your book, because, you know, we spent the whole season talking about other people's books, other people's amazing, wonderful contributions. But of course, you also have produced some wonderful contributions and you've got a new book coming out. And so I want to ask you a little bit more about this new book that's coming out, where we can get it, and anything else you want to share about it.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. So about 10 years, I started on this path of how to help educators infuse creative thinking into their classrooms. Because what was interesting is Sir Ken Robinson had done his TED Talk, his very popular TED Talk around creativity in education. And he really inspired many educators who were then coming to me saying, I'm inspired. I understand why we need creativity in the classroom. But the big question was, so how do I actually do it? And how do I do it when I'm pressed for time? And I started doing these workshops where I was infusing creative thinking skills into the classroom. So I'll give you a quick example, Matt. The one I just mentioned around curiosity is one of the tips. So instead of having students, you know, just if you're giving a content, you don't just give the content, you have them come up with questions around the content. And so that's just an example of how you take a creative thinking skill and you put it together with your content. And it's really easy to do, and it engages students in creative thinking while they're learning their content. And so there's 20 different creative thinking skills, and they're all based off the work of E. Paul Torrance, who, as you know, is the father of creativity in education and came out of his research. So skills like risk-taking and embracing ambiguity and looking at things from multiple perspectives, all of these skills are used. And I started doing workshops with educators on how do you have students look at things from different perspectives? And they were giving me all these ideas. And at one point, one of the teachers said, I hope you're collecting all these ideas for a book. So that's what I started doing. So the first book I put together was Weaving Creativity into Every Strand of Your Curriculum. And that book has over 2,000 ideas for how teachers can weave creative thinking skills into the classroom. But then teachers started coming to me saying, okay, I really, can you give me a lesson example? And as I mentioned earlier, I really struggle with giving teachers scripts because I think it's about context, context, context. So what we did is I worked with Carolina Schnapp, who is an educator from Chile, and we designed 20 lessons to weave creative thinking skills into your content. So for example, one of them is around playfulness and humor. And where do you not often see playfulness and humor? Studying for exams. So we give out a whole template on how you can infuse playfulness and humor and gaming into studying for a test in your classroom. And we give examples on how to heighten the anticipation and how to get students excited about what you're going to be teaching them. And then how do you deepen that learning and how do you extend the learning? So we use the Torrance incubation model as a framework for all 20 lessons. And part of this model that I love is about how do you extend the learning beyond that of the walls of your classroom? Because so often we give students a lesson, they walk out of their classrooms, the students walk out of their classrooms, and then guess what happens? Nothing. There's nothing that helps them to continue to think about the content they learned. So what we've designed in these 20 lessons to weave creativity into your classroom is ways in which you can infuse these creative thinking skills to arouse curiosity and heighten anticipation, to deepen their understanding of your content, and to extend the learning beyond the walls of your classroom. So that is the next book that's coming out, and it's available on Amazon. It's in color. The visuals are done by world-renowned children's book author Barney Salzberg, who wrote Beautiful Oops, which if you haven't seen that book, is my favorite children's book of all time and focuses on making mistakes and turning them into something beautiful. So he's done all the visuals and captured all of these different characters. And you can find, if you go to the Creativity and Education website, you can find downloadable posters of all of these skills. You can find warm-ups to all of these skills. So we're really starting to build out these lessons so that teachers can take it and immediately applied into their classroom. Because what we do at Creativity and Education is we really focus on taking anything related to creativity and immediately applying it into the classroom. So instead, it's really the how do we do it and how do we do it in a way that's practical and easy to apply and not something that is sort of a revolution in your classroom, but an evolution in your classroom.
All right. Well, Cindy, I think we've got to end our debrief now. I've really enjoyed it.
It was amazing. And Matt, I just want to pose a question to all of our listeners. We would love to hear from you. If you could post a review to your favorite podcast platform, we would greatly appreciate it. And if you have any suggestions or recommendations of people you would like to hear us interview, you can reach out to us at hello@creativityandeducation.com. And we would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Fueling Creativity podcast. I'm Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Whirlwood.